This is the PoetryFoundation.org podcast for the week of June 11th, 2007. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, bridging page and stage. Poetry and popularity are two words you don't often hear together in the same sentence. But there's one genre of poetry that is genuinely, persistently popular. And you don't go to bookstores to find it.
If you could see me now as I pump and swagger across that stage.
Poetry slams. Competitions between performance poets are relatively recent. Mark Smith got it started in the early 80s at a bar called The Green Mill on the north side of Chicago. In the mid-80s, Bob Holman brought it to the New Yorican Poets Cafe on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. Then Russell Simmons, HBO, and MTV took it to a national audience in the 90s. And it's still going strong in bars and on stages throughout the country. Here to explain why and to introduce a few poems is Jeremy Richards. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey.
Jeremy Richards is a writer, an actor, and a radio producer. He interviewed five slam poets who he says are bridging the divide between stage and page. You can read his article on our website, poetryfoundation.org. Jeremy joins me from KUOW in Seattle, where he works. So, Jeremy, why is there such a division between performance poets and what should we call them for the purposes of our interview here? Literary poets or page poets?
Academic poets, page
academic poets. Yeah.
I think there's a perceived divide among some people who have only seen cursory examples of poetry slams. Maybe they caught an episode of HBO's Deaf Poetry one night, or they've seen a couple of poets here and there who seem to have something going for them and seem to have a certain charm and charisma and dynamic in their performance. But some of these critics think that, well, that's not really poetry from what they've seen so far.
But, and it's sometimes true that when you put those poems down on the page, they can lie a little flat, right?
That's true. That's true. And that's one of the reasons that I have written this for the Poetry Foundation, because I think in every case with these five poets and with the two that we're going to talk about today especially, you can put them on the page and they will hold up.
Is the audience for slam poetry, does it seem dramatically different than when you go to a more traditional poetry reading?
It varies. Yeah. I mean, you don't fill an auditorium with 2,000 people for a standard poetry reading unless it's a really big name. But poetry slams have done that for people going in not even knowing the poets, but knowing that they're in for a good time.
Yeah, that's pretty remarkable, actually, to get that kind of audience and that kind of audience interaction going back and forth. The traditional poetry reading can be pretty deadly because oftentimes they don't even applaud between poems. A poet reads a poem, then there's dead silence in the auditorium.
Right.
And
yeah.
she shuffles her papers and then reads another poem, and it's followed by more dead silence.
Yeah. It's a certain reverence for the poem. I was just at a Robert Bly reading, and he would have to wait for a second and sort of coax the audience to say, no, it's okay to applaud, you know. I mean, even though they would want to, they felt like they shouldn't. And he said, it's a way of reminding me that I'm not up here alone.
And I think the whole ethos of poetry slams is that you can actually boo as well, correct?
Yeah. I mean, it varies from venue to venue. Chicago tends to be the hardcore, you know, they'll start snapping if you're going too long, and they'll boo you if they don't like you, and they'll answer your rhyme before you say it if it's too predictable.
they'll snap their fingers like that?
They snap their fingers, so it's not the beat tradition. It's not, yeah, we dig you. It's, yeah, you're past 3 minutes and you're wearing out our patience.
Yeah.
So in Seattle, they're fairly more polite. I don't think I've been heckled too much.
Well, let's hear one slam poem. I actually read this poem before listening to it, and it seemed to hold up quite well on the page. It's by Susan Summers Willett. It's called Ophelia's Technicolor G-String, an Urban Mythology. Jeremy, can you first of all tell us who Susan Summers Willett is and a little bit about this poem to set it up?
Susan Summers Willett is, well, by many accounts, an academic poet, but also a poet who has been in poetry slams for several years. So she does give that great example of a bridging page and stage.
Yeah.
And this piece is also a perfect portrait of how she does that. Ophelia's Technicolor G-String is a performance piece. It's a persona piece, setting up herself as Ophelia, as a stripper in New Orleans. And at least that's how she sets it up at first, and we'll see how that takes a turn.
Ophelia's Technicolor G-String. and urban mythology. The air tonight is thick as curry. Like every other night this summer, I could cut it with my wine glass, spray it with mace. Over and over, it would heal together like a wound. Follow me in my click and pace of heels down Conte Street, St. Anne's, Bourbon. Oh, Hamlet, if you could see me now as I pump and swagger across that stage, cape dripping to the floor, me in 3-inch heels and a Technicolor G-string, you would not wish me in a convent. They've made me a queen here, married me off to a quarter bag and a pint of gin. The old men tend to bark and splatter rabid at each table. I think they stay up all night just to spite the moon. They bring their diseased mouths to the French market in the morning, sell Creole tomatoes to tourists who don't know what they are. Each bald head shines plump and red. It seems like so long ago since I modeled for those legs outside of Big Daddy's, the ones over the door that swing in, out. The sculptor made me painted as Mardi Gras. I thought you might recognize them. If you ever passed with the boys, parading from Abbey to Tavern, I recognize them as royal feet in need of slippers. Someday, I expect to find you here, sitting in between the first and second rows, fingering bones or something worse. And in the end, you will throw me a Columbine, light me a Marlboro, and take me to a 24/7 where jukebox light quivers, makes us thin as ghosts. But for now, I will dance for the fat man who sits in your place, sweats his love for me at 3 a.m. because only he knows I am Horatio in drag.
That was Susan Summers Willett performing her poem Ophelia's Technicolor G-String, an Urban Mythology. That recording comes to us from the Poetry Slam Incorporated podcast. Susan Summers Willett also has a book of poems out. It's called Rome, and it's published by Southern Illinois University Press in their Crab Orchard series. Jeremy, let's hear another poem that you chose for your article. And this is, we're going to hear an excerpt of a poem by Corina McGlynn. Can you tell us a little bit about Corina McGlynn?
Yeah, Corina is so widely published for being only 29. She has literally about 160 literary publications.
Uh-huh.
But she's also been on 5 Poetry Slam teams. So she's another, you know, huge force in both the Poetry Slam and in the literary world. And she says that she's looked to as the spokesperson for Poetry Slams in all of these university settings and at conferences. And she's asked to speak about it, and they kind of fetishize the idea of Poetry Slams, thinking it's this strange creature.
Mm-hmm.
She says it's like trying to describe a sexual encounter with a celebrity. Everybody's like, wow, what's that like? But as we can hear, it's really not that alien.
So we're going to hear an excerpt from this long poem. It's called The Camp River Poems. Can you explain a little bit what this poem's about?
This is really a poem about being young and looking at the inevitability of aging and personifying this river as this embodiment of time and of almost this prefigured nostalgia for things that haven't even passed yet.
So let's hear an excerpt of it. It's actually about 2.5 minutes long, and we'll talk about it afterwards.
Swimming in the river. If you ever find the drain, don't unplug it. Don't swim near the roots of trees. There are eels and evil nixies there. Understand that the river has no personal stake in whether you come up for air. Don't do it with dumb boys in a box of Chablis. Don't stuff your bikini. The river likes to uncover embarrassing truths. Don't do it in an electrical storm. The river is strongly connected to things like fate and temptation. Don't do it in a flood unless you have an ark, because the river does not understand that people are no longer demigods. The river and mythology. You will never remember these things. You will have to look them up again and again. Don't ask your geography teacher where Alf the sacred river runs. Try to memorize the difference between oceanids, harpies, nereids, naiads, sprites, mermaids, dryads, hamadryads, and nymphs. Fail miserably. Develop your own mythology. Remember the time you canoed out past the boundaries and almost went over a waterfall. Remember the rings of crocuses you set afloat to honor Ophelia. Remember when three girls came out of nowhere and stripped you, throwing your red shorts in the river. The river and aging. Know that there is a point of diminishing returns when it comes to your skill in the river. If you can do a double somersault and swim from one end to the other and back again without coming up for air, do it often, because you won't always be able to. If there are lifeguards, flirt up a storm. Memorize what you looked like in their mirrored sunglasses. It will haunt you. Don't throw rocks at the wrinkled necks of sunning turtles. You will both age. Only to the river, you will shrivel in what seems like seconds, a plum left on the dashboard of a hot car, and you won't live long enough to see the river change perceptibly, even if you eat wheat germ. But if you've had a perfect day there, I mean a really perfect day, don't come back again until you're 80 and carrying a quiver full of naked grandchildren that you let fly, graceful flesh arrows who arc into the water and grin from ear to ear as everybody you ever loved surfaces and breathes again.
That was an excerpt from a Corina McGlynn performance. Corina McGlynn's work is featured in the 2006 Best of the Net anthology and in Spoken Word Revolution Redux, out from Sourcebooks. Jeremy, you actually heard the Camp River poems in Chicago. You were sitting right next to a bartender who heard the same poem. What did that bartender do?
Well, he was this big dude with, you know, dreadlocks and nose ring, and he wasn't paying attention to hardly any of the poems, you know, just kind of going about his day in the back of this really crowded and sweaty room. And somewhere in the middle of this piece, he just became entranced. And at the last line, he was just startled into tears. And to no one in particular, he was just like, that's so not fair. That was a real poem. I mean, that was an effing poem.
And he had real tears in his eye?
It appeared to me. I mean, a lot of people had goosebumps at the end of this piece when she performed it, so I wasn't surprised.
Jeremy Richards, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Jeremy Richards is a writer whose article on slam poetry can be found at poetryfoundation.org. It includes interviews with slam poets and samples of their work. You can find out more about Jeremy himself and read some of his poems on his website, jeremyrichards.com. Do let us know what you think of this program, where our motto is...
You should never explain a poem, but it always helps nevertheless.
Our email address is podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The music used in this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For the poetryfoundation.org podcast, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.